1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. The FBI is now investigating the attack on a power grid in North Carolina. CBS's Jim Kursula has the latest.
It could take several days to get all of the power back on in Moore County, North Carolina, after two electrical substations were struck by gunfire. It's being investigated as a criminal act. Mark Adote is using a generator to keep his store open.
It's an inconvenience for most folks. It was pretty cold last night, so I think that's... anybody who has electric heat felt it last night, that's for sure.
More than 30,000 homes and businesses are without power. Schools are closed in the area about an hour southwest of Raleigh. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Cases of COVID, RSV, and the flu are all up across the country amid a shortage of children's medications. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
FDA is in touch with the various manufacturers and stand ready to provide support where possible.
Pfizer's also asked for emergency authorization on its updated COVID vaccine for kids under five. Senate candidates Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker getting some help from some celebrity friends ahead of tomorrow's runoff in Georgia. CBS's Nicole Killian explains.
Stevie Wonder appearing for Warnock. And saturating the airwaves with more than $90 million spent on ads.
My work is not done.
Herschel Walker will vote for Georgia.
Warnock has outspent his GOP rival by more than 2-1.
High honors for police who saved the Capitol on January 6th as Congress prepares to give out congressional gold medals tomorrow.
Sergeant Aquilino Gonell testified before Congress about the heroics that day.
I'm afraid to think what could have happened on January 6th. I want to publicly thank all the law enforcement agencies that responded to assist that day.
At the ceremony in the Capitol Rotunda, the police departments are honored. The rank and file can get replica medals at a later date. Scott McFarland, CBS News, the Capitol.
CBS's Anna Warner tells us Hertz will pay $168 million to settle false car rental claims.
They had rented a car from Hertz, and then suddenly they're stopped by police, handcuffed, some of them stopped at gunpoint, even thrown in jail, because police said that Hertz had reported the car stolen, when in fact it had been legitimately rented by these people.
Actress Kirstie Alley has died from cancer at 71.
St. Jerome's Hospital. Hey, slow down! The first stage of labor can take hours.
Yeah, so can the Midtown traffic.
Look Who's Talking was her big screen break, but she also won an Emmy and a Golden Globe for her time on Cheers. John Travolta, Valerie Bertinelli, and stars are paying tribute to her. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Attention all business owners who rent or lease space, including storage space. Stop wasting your money paying someone else for your space. You can now save a ton of money and own your own building with the incredible end-of-the-year sale prices from General Steel. That's right, start saving money every month on renting space from others. Just call 888-74-STEEL to see how General Steel can help you save money. Our 50-year structural warranty buildings are custom designed for your needs and save you a ton of money. Call 888-74-STEEL.
Take it from a successful entrepreneur. If you need to expand or start a new business, you need General Steel.
Great team and the competitive pricing is the reason I went with General Steel.
Call 888-74-STEEL now, and you can get any of our popular quick construction structures, including a 40 by 60 foot building or a 50 by 100 clear span building at end of the year savings. Call 888-74-STEEL. That's 888-747-8335. 888-74-STEEL. For Steel.
Remember when you could turn on the radio and hear a song you'd never heard before? A song that would make you tap your feet, snap your fingers, maybe get up and dance a little? A song that once you heard it made you say, that's a surefire hit. Those days are gone. Or are they? Tune in on Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. and catch Seth Faces the Music on WFHR. The premise is simple. Every week I pick a theme and find songs that fit the theme. It's so simple yet so good. Join me, won't you, for Seth Faces the Music every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio WFHR.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Here is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Tuesday, December 6th. In Wood County, the Operations Committee will meet at 9 a.m. at the courthouse in Room 114. The City of Wisconsin Rapids will hold their Finance and Property Committee meeting at 4 p.m. in the Council Chambers at City Hall. The City of Stevens Point will hold their Police and Fire Commission meeting at 2 p.m. In Portage County, the Traffic Safety Commission will meet at 10 a.m. at the Portage County Law Enforcement Center LEC Training Room. The Space and Properties Committee will meet at 3:30 p.m. in Annex Conference Rooms 1 and 2. The Executive Operations Committee will meet at 5 p.m. in the same rooms. The Land and Water Conservation Committee will meet at 7 p.m., also in Annex Conference Rooms 1 and 2. In Adams County, the Land and Water and UWEX Committee meeting will take place from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at the Adams County Courthouse. And that's the news update on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies expected overnight with a few flurries possible at times. Lows around 16. Northerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overcast tomorrow. Highs level off around 32. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Lows level off around 17. 33 Wednesday under partly cloudy skies. 35 Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 29.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today during your lunch hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. So last week, my mom was supposed to do a girls' trip with her four best friends, and they were going to go to Cedarburg, and the day before they're supposed to go, one of the friends had to report that at their Thanksgiving big family event, over half of the people who were there had either influenza, COVID, or RSV when they were all together, and the friend said, Do you want me to come, as a very thoughtful way of saying, do we want to spend this time together? I feel fine right now, but the likelihood that I am carrying something now is very high. And so they unfortunately canceled their trip. But it was a reminder that right now there is a triple threat of so many viruses running around, whether it's influenza, RSV, and COVID, and so apparently at higher levels than we typically see this time of year. So to walk us through it is President and CEO of the Medical College of Wisconsin, Dr. John Raymond. Welcome to the show, Dr. Raymond.
Yeah, thank you, Kristen. Glad to be here.
So I feel like for a month or so now, we've been seeing so many kids are sick. Hospitals are starting to run out, especially because they're respiratory viruses. And so what is kind of, where are we right now in Wisconsin as far as how either overloaded hospitals are, but how many cases we're seeing, and is this abnormal?
What we're facing right now is not typical. We have a steady but high level of COVID with a manageable number of hospitalizations. But when you superimpose on that a rapidly rising early flu season and then earlier than usual and more severe respiratory syncytial virus season, both pediatric and adult hospitals are filling up with people that have respiratory symptoms. These are three very different viruses, but they manifest in very similar ways.
Okay.
Cough, fever, constitutional symptoms, and in some cases, severe problems with shortness of breath. That COVID predominantly now is affecting people over the age of 70. There's been a threefold increase in hospitalizations in California and New Mexico, so we expect that there probably will be something similar happening here. RSV may have peaked, but it is a very significant respiratory virus that affects the elderly and kids. And flu, obviously, is just starting to peak now, or starting to rise now.
And so, do they all spread in the same way?
Essentially, yes, Kristen. Okay. So these viruses, even though they have similar symptoms, they may have different physiologies, but they spread in the same way. So respiratory spread is the most common, but also spread through contact on touch surfaces can happen, especially with flu and RSV, a respiratory syncytial virus. So the things that we recommend people do, other than staying away from people that are obviously sick, or if you're sick, staying away from other folks, is to wash your hands, socially distance, or wear a mask if you're around vulnerable people. And for all three viruses, the elderly are vulnerable. People that have immunocompromised, maybe from cancer or from rheumatological diseases, also are at high risk. And then for flu and RSV, kids also are very susceptible.
And so what is it, because is if for kids, is it more likely going to be influenza than RSV because, like you said, the COVID is still predominantly affecting older people?
Yeah, COVID is infecting everybody, but the disease manifestations are more severe in older
people. Okay.
Kids are still getting infected with COVID. Just looking at the hospital censuses, there's about five times more kids hospitalized with RSV right now than with COVID, and maybe twice as many with rhinovirus as with COVID. So we still have some COVID, but some of these other viruses are causing more hospitalizations in kids.
We're talking to Dr. Raymond, who is the CEO and president of the Medical College of Wisconsin, about the mixed bag of influenza, RSV, and COVID. And so obviously this is also on top of shortages in hospitals. And so how are different hospitals being able to manage this uptick in cases? And I guess even more importantly, knowing that there is a shortage of workers, at what point would you advise people that the symptoms are severe enough to go to the hospital versus what can be done at home?
Right. Well, obviously you want to consult with your doctor, but if a child or an adult is short of breath, if they have a high fever, if they're very profoundly weak, then obviously they need to be seen. And typically that would either be in an urgent care or an emergency department. So I wouldn't change the way that the threshold that people have for seeking medical help. But we do want to do everything we can, not just to protect each other, but to make sure that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed. So the usual things that we've talked about, hand washing, socially distancing, avoiding interacting with sick people, protecting the vulnerable, those are things that we should be thinking about, especially around the holiday season. And we have seen a very significant spike in respiratory diseases that have happened within a week or so after Thanksgiving.
Dr. Raymond, I had a friend who was visiting from Texas a couple weeks before Thanksgiving, and she actually had influenza A. I didn't realize that there was an A and a B, and she was really, really sick.
Yeah, influenza A typically causes more significant symptoms, but there are two major strains, A and B, and the vaccines that we roll out every year are typically tailored to what the scientists believe would be the most likely strains of A and B that would be circulating.
And so as far as why we're kind of seeing all of this at the same time, is there any reason to think that it was because of the last 2 years around this time, it was only COVID? And is there a different immunity that's changed in when we were isolating versus when we're not? Or is there any kind of leading theories as to why all three of these things are so prevalent at the same time right now?
Right. Well, there's certainly a lot of theories about what masking and isolation may have done to immunity from non-COVID diseases. But I think the most likely thing that's happening here is people are tired of being apart and they're mixing and intermingling with each other in normal ways, pre-pandemic ways. And that's just given these respiratory viruses an opportunity to spread maybe a little earlier and a little bit more severely than we would have in a typical season.
In some ways, it's almost like we have collective amnesia as far as what happened. And everyone was so good originally about stay home if you're sick, don't go to work. Work doesn't want you to come to work if you're sick. And I just think too, Dr. Raymond, it seems like we've all kind of forgotten about all of that.
Yeah, let's face it. People are tired of isolation. They're tired of wearing masks. They're tired of doing all these things to mitigate the risk of COVID. But these measures also work very well for other common viruses. And I don't think people understand influenza in a bad season can kill 50,000 people in the U.S. Respiratory syncytial virus kills 14,000 adults every year and 500 kids. So these are still very significant problems. And this isn't really the time for us to go completely back to our pre-pandemic habits. A little bit of precaution is really warranted right now, especially with the cold weather and with people getting together for the holidays.
And so obviously, I would imagine that your recommendation beyond what you said, washing your hands, wearing a mask if you're not feeling well, socially distance, is getting vaccinated if you're not vaccinated, and boosters if you need boosters for both influenza and COVID. And I also I'm assuming, because I haven't heard anything, there's not a vaccination for RSV.
That's right, Kristen. No vaccine for RSV yet. And yes, the vast majority of medical professionals are recommending that people get vaccinated, both for seasonal influenza and for COVID, especially if you're in a vulnerable population or you live or work with vulnerable people. So these new bivalent boosters for COVID do give what appears to be a stronger immunity to the new strains of the virus that are circulating, the Omicron variants that are more contagious. And especially if you're in a high-risk group, we are recommending that you receive a vaccination. But obviously, if you have concerns about vaccine safety, talk to your doctor.
What are our vaccination numbers in Wisconsin, Dr. Raymond?
They're lower than we'd like. They're at about 67% for people that have had at least one vaccine against COVID, and about 37% for people who have gotten one booster. So obviously not optimal. We'd like to see more people get vaccinated.
And so just as a reminder, as we get people get sick, and so once you are sick, don't go to work, wash your hands, wear a mask. But as far as kind of that in-between level of when we get sick and it's not so bad that we are going to go to the hospital, does NyQuil work? Like for the over-the-counter stuff, when you are feeling bad, as a doctor, what do you recommend to make yourself feel better with what we probably blanketly call a cold?
Like everybody else, I'll take an analgesic or a cold medicine if I want to feel better. So symptomatic management is good for these respiratory viruses. One of the problems is we are seeing some shortages of both over-the-counter and prescription medication associated with our disrupted supply chain.
Well, great.
I was hoping you were going to suggest a brandy hot toddy, but maybe that's just me.
That's all right. Home remedies are okay if they work for you.
Whatever you got to do to come to work, Jane. Well, is there any other advice you would give to people in our audience as far as what to look out for or how to stay healthy?
There are two things. If you are diagnosed with influenza early and you're in a high-risk group, you can be prescribed Tamiflu. It does reduce the symptoms and the severity of illness. And the same would go for COVID. We do have Paxlovid, which if you can take it early, does lower the risk of severe disease and lower the risk of death and hospitalization. So again, get diagnosed early and make yourself available for these medications that can prevent severe illness.
Well, that is great to hear. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. Our guest has been Dr. John Raymond, who is the CEO and president of the Medical College of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all that you do.
Thanks, Kristen. Thanks, Jane. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, some more Twitter drama, because that seems never ending. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The All of Us Research Program is asking for people to help researchers make healthcare more precise by creating individualized prevention and treatment options. When you join, you'll share your unique health information and become part of the largest and most diverse medical research program ever. The more data researchers have, the more they'll be able to create better care for all of us. Introducing the next breakthrough in medicine, you. Learn more at joinallofus.org/WBA, sponsored by All of Us Wisconsin.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Showers again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 29. Overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
When I was a little bitty boy, my grandmother bought me a cute little toy. Silver bells hanging on a string. She told me it was my ding-a-ling-a-ling-o.
Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for joining us during the lunch hour. As always, join the conversation, 844-967-2789. And a reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends.
Spread the word.
Spread the word. We are a growing show on a growing network of radio stations, and we can always use your help if you are an evangelist for us to tell more people that we're here. Every day, Monday through Friday. And follow us on social media, As Goes Wisconsin, and help us help you by getting more people to watch us. Good choice.
Why, thank you.
Both you hit both boxes as far as being topical for what we're going to talk about this segment, and also Christmassy.
Yes.
So I don't even know where to start on this. Were you following this on Friday night, James?
I was.
So, you could maybe set it up better. Though. I'll set up how my experience of how this went down. So, we were out for the Third Ward Christmas lighting Friday night with friends. But, of course, because I'm addicted to my phone, I passively was seeing tweets from Elon saying, there was this big hype for a Friday night drop of the Twitter files.
Bombshell.
Cue X-Files music. Dun, dun, dun. And then as I kind of passively checked throughout the evening, there were certain people who seemed very vindicated, and there were certain people who were like, we already knew all of this. And since you followed much more closely, what did you find out?
So Twitter, in conjunction with a journalist called Matt Tabibi.
Tabby?
Tabby.
I think it's T-A. So this is a journalist who... I think up until this kind of Friday night dump, was very respected. I mean, he has his own Substack. He has almost 1 million followers on Twitter, and he's a journalist. He's a reporter, investigative journalist. And somehow he got roped into being the deliverer of how, during the 2020 election, Hunter Biden and some stories and tweets and posts about him were handled by Twitter employees as far as content moderation and censoring of pornographic posts.
Right.
So go ahead.
So Tabibi, again, in conjunction with Twitter and following whatever parameters Twitter put on him, looked over these internal discussions about getting these pictures of Hunter Biden's schmeckle basically squashed. Now, Hunter Biden isn't a candidate.
He's not an elected official.
He's never been an elected official, nor a candidate. And apparently, the Trump administration had done some similar things in reaching out to Twitter, asking them to squash other things.
Well, it sounds like, in general, for people who work on campaigns and are career, you know, campaign managers or involved, and since the advent of social media, and I'm sure even prior to that, with the media in general, the conversations that happen between the people who are giving the news, whether that's reporting on it or being a platform for it to be reported on or things tweeted about, there is conversations that happen as far as, you know, negotiating what gets printed, what gets posted, what gets taken down. And this is not new as far as, you know, anyone who's ever watched, you know, the morning show on Apple, as far as if I give you a bigger story, will you kill this one and all of that. And so basically what it turned out was the tweet that got the most retweets was an internal email of the Biden campaign listing off different tweets that were mostly pornography, basically, as far as naked pictures of sexual acts and stuff like that, to a Twitter employee, and the Twitter employee writing back handled. And that was the big gotcha moment, to which Elon Musk said this is a violation of First Amendment rights, which, once again, we're back to the point of the First Amendment protects you from going to jail.
For speaking out against the government.
Yes. And it does not protect you or it give you the ability to post whatever you want on the internet. That is still left up to the platforms to decide how much content moderation they want to execute. If they want to, you know, their charter is to create an online platform that people want to be a part of. And so for their advertisers, for their majority of their users, do you want to scroll through and see unsolicited dick pics? I think most of us would not.
There's actually
laws that says we do not want this, and you can be charged for doing that.
Unless you follow Brett Favre. Sorry, I just had to throw that out there. From what I understand, Twitter is still a privately held company, is it not?
It's even more of a privately held company now, because before, at least, it was a public company, and now it's privately held by Elon.
And when this happened, these Hunter Biden picks, now President Biden had not yet been elected president.
No.
So this was not the Biden administration doing this. This was the Biden campaign doing this.
Yes, which are separate.
Which are separate.
Which in all of campaign for people who are current, take a local example. So the team that was working for the governor, Tony Evers, in his office at the Capitol, was separate from the people who were working on his campaign. So for elected officials, there are campaign laws that divide those two. And so you have your on-premise job that you are getting paid for that has nothing to do with campaigning. And then you have your team that is in charge of campaigning. And so, yes, it was the Biden campaign. He was not president. And to sum it up nicely, as far as what Tim Miller,
such a good piece
for The Bulwark, he was such a good writer. But his title for his piece on this is, "No, you do not have a constitutional right to post Hunter Biden's dick pic on Twitter." And I think that kind of sums up what this whole hullabaloo on Friday night on Twitter was. Which just is driving more people to be like, what am I doing here? Just, you know, the addiction to that bird app.
The story just kind of went limp.
And on that note, we're taking a break.
Oh, dang, we saw you.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Pride.
Left corner, three in the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
If you're talking, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
We may be thousands of miles apart, but we can still connect. And when we do, we make things better. At Child Fund, we connect children all around the world with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. Together, we co-create connections that help millions of children who live in poverty worldwide, and their families, and their communities, and you. Join us. Together, we can make the world a better place. Two small worlds at a time. Visit childfund.org to learn more.
Hello, music lovers. Tim the Polka Guy here to let you know the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show is moving to a new time slot, 12 noon every Saturday. So join me for the best in old-time music every Saturday at 12 noon right here on the new WFHR 97.5 FM and AM 1320.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Former Milwaukee Elections Commission Deputy Director Kimberly Zapata made her initial court appearance on Friday, where she posted a $2,500 signature bond. She entered not guilty pleas to three misdemeanor counts of making a false statement to obtain an absentee ballot. She is also charged with misconduct in public office, which is a felony. Zapata is represented by an attorney from the Thomas More Society, a conservative law firm that assisted former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman in his review of the 2020 election, which was funded by taxpayers. Zapata's next court appearance will be December 9th. Wisconsin gas prices are falling. AAA reports the statewide average for regular was $3.70 a gallon on Friday. That's about 60 cents lower than a month ago. Some stations are selling gas for less than $3 a gallon. Experts are predicting prices will go even lower this week. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies expected overnight with a few flurries possible at times. Lows around 16. Northerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overcast tomorrow. Highs level off around 32. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Lows level off around 17. 33 Wednesday under partly cloudy skies. 35 Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 29.
Fine podcasts. So last week, I bookmarked this because I knew that I wanted to take time to read it. But Natalie Eilbert, who published a story that she's been working on for since June, that looks into the fact that minors in Wisconsin need approval for physical and mental care and basically don't have any recourse if their parents refuse. And I think for a lot of us who have very loving parents, the situation that arises where your parents wouldn't want what's best for you or to provide care doesn't always seem top of mind, but there are a lot of people who are under 18 who that is not the case for in Wisconsin. And she highlights a lot of those stories, both the specific ones and larger trends. And so thank you so much for joining us to talk about this today, Natalie.
Thanks so much for having me, Kristen.
So let's just summarize kind of the bigger issue right now that you found and what prompted you to look into this further.
Yeah, so it kind of fell into my lap last year when I was interviewing House of Hope, which is a shelter, a homeless shelter and support program support place up in Green Bay. And Beth Hudak, who works for House of Hope, mentioned the frustrations she's experienced with trying to get homeless unaccompanied youth the care that they need. And what it means to be unaccompanied is your parent or legal guardian isn't in the picture. That could be a result of their being homeless themselves, they're incarcerated, you fled home because of it being unsafe, or you were kicked out. With these minors in particular, if something happens to them, they just don't have any recourse, whether it's trying to seek a prescription, get an x-ray done on a broken bone, have something fixed that they need fixed, like a broken leg or, access to a therapist for the years and years of trauma they've experienced. All of those under Wisconsin law require a signature from a parent or legal guardian. And again, sometimes that's really difficult for, doctors and hospitals providers to obtain. Sometimes it's just, the parent or legal guardian refuses to sign the document that would give consent to providers taking care of these minors. So that's how I got involved, because I went into it with skepticism. I didn't think this is possible, that kids could experience such neglect from both their parents and then surrounding systems. But what I learned from talking to young people is indeed there are these really dangerous barriers to care.
And I think, because I want to break this down a little bit further as far as the estimated number of minors experiencing homelessness, and we could walk through a little bit more of the different definitions, but the homelessness of minors in Wisconsin alone is potentially approaching 20,000. Because there's at least in your article, it said the last kind of like hard number was from 2019, 2020, which obviously was when everything started to get upended with COVID. And that was 17,000. But estimates now said it could be up to 20, which is...
That's right.
It's an enormous number for a fairly small state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it is surprising until we think about what homelessness means. It's not always living in a tent on the street, although that does happen. These are kids who are couch hopping. They're what's called doubling up. They're living with families. They're, in and out of homeless shelters. There's just so many different ways that someone can be homeless, whether they have a roof over their head or not. Mm-hmm. If they don't have consistent care at home, if they don't have a home to return to, if they don't have a reliable adult in their lives or a legal guardian, their whole life can be so easily upended.
And so that, I think, is sometimes a situation as far as separating out the definitions, because I think for a lot of us, sometimes when we think of homelessness, we think of people living on the streets, whether it's adults or minors. And one of the things I think is important is even reframing the definition or using things as adjectives versus nouns, and saying someone who's experiencing homelessness, because it is sometimes they're couch hopping, they're living in a car, they have a spot until they don't have a spot. And so is that what you found more of as far as the minors between, I think, the House of Hope, Project 1649, and different homes that are trying to be a safe space for minors who are trying to get out of a bad situation at their house, but don't have, let alone the legal knowledge of what is available to them, but even, you know, the wherewithal is being a 16-year-old trying to figure this all out.
Yeah, and an important distinction is that a lot of most, I would say a majority of homeless shelters in Wisconsin don't have licensing to take care of kids younger than 17. There's only two in the state that will even accept 0 to 17-year-olds. And that, you know, a lot of places like Project 1649 are working to change that. Though right now they can only shelter young people between the ages of 17 and 21. I believe that's the number. But so there's a lot of limitations for who can find shelter and what's legally possible. I know that, you know, a lot of young people who are homeless, have parents who are extremely young too. So their House of Hope is one of the few places that accepts, teenage mothers who are homeless. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other situation too. But yeah, it's all, it's a big mess right now when it comes to taking care of young people.
Well, we're talking to Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter for the USA Today Network in Central Wisconsin, and about her piece that she that was published last week on the lack of recourse for minors who need care but don't have a parental unit to sign off, because in Wisconsin you need your parents to agree for you to receive both physical and mental health care. And so I guess, not that I would imagine to know much about the, you know, child health services system and when it's foster care and the state getting involved, but it feels like there's a negligence with at least one of the stories you wrote about in your piece is a young woman who had a broken leg and her father refusing her to get care. And the long-term ramifications that will happen from that, as far as her leg not healing correctly, but truly the doctor's hands in that case are tied. And I guess my question is, how is that not negligence? How is that something that the state doesn't end up getting involved in?
It's so complicated. So one way to think about this is from the perspective of Wisconsin law. It's completely legal. There aren't laws that would say neglecting to sign that type of paperwork is abuse. Of course it is. It can be. But that has to go through a bunch of different people, right? Like, if the CPS, Child Protective Services, get involved at that point, a lot of kids actually don't want to have their parents in the system. They don't want to be in the system. You know, it's a question of what can, if the parent or legal guardian refuses to get care for this person, to take care of them, who's responsible? There's no one who can say, that can stand up and say, I will do it. I mean, there are cases where people, like, you know, doctors may decide, you know, I want to take care of this person anyway, and they'll reach out and do the proper, take the proper steps, but it may not be in their control. Hospitals right now are really at over capacity. It's really hard to keep everything straight. And a lot of times it's a difficult calculus for doctors to get involved in something that is, again, technically legal.
Natalie, I just want to clarify so I can wrap my head around this. So an abusive parent could dislocate their child's arm and then elect not to have that treated. And unless Child Protective Services is called in by someone, that's fine.
I wouldn't say fine. You know, I don't know the extent to which someone, I mean, that is abuse. That is physical abuse. So if someone actively breaks the arm of their child, that, you know, police may get involved with that. And then it's not in the hands of doctors anymore. There are legal issues involved with this. I imagine that a doctor may feel obligated to make a phone call, but it doesn't always happen, as in the case of this one girl who, because her father didn't sign, she had to go home and the doctors felt terrible. I think she was taken care of by Project 1649. You know, they were able to do what they could for her. They worked with case managers, they worked with, they confided goal, but it's really complicated. And again, not everyone wants to, you know, wants those charges pressed. People don't want to be put into the system, because once you're in the system, it's really hard to get out of it. So it's more complicated than simply having, you know, CPS intervene. It's more complicated than simply having a parent reported for child neglect. There's a lot of other steps that are going on here.
This was the quote that I pulled out that I feel like is kind of the crux of what the story is. And so it's a story that serves as a metaphor for Wisconsin's current medical system where minors are concerned. Not meeting the medical needs of young people can lead to permanent damage, whether the issue at play is as visible as a broken leg or as invisible as mental health disorders. Because that was one of the other stories you featured as part of the report, is not only access to a therapist, but access to meds that are needed. And really the ability to, whatever the mental disorder or condition that you're trying to live with as a young person, knowing that you need that and still needing your parents to sign off on it, and how much long-term damage that can create.
Yeah. And, you know, that brings to mind the story of Desi, who's the main character in some ways of this tale. If you look at that case, it has all the ingredients of neglect, right, and abuse. And yet still, just to answer your question a little bit farther, Jane, that father still has rights to her medical care, even though he has a huge, like a staggering police record, even though he has been reported to the police before and Desi was the only one seemingly acting like an adult, he still can sign off on her care. You know, she told me that she recently, in my last phone call with her, she actually had broken or strained her wrist, and she was just taking care of it herself, because the alternative is she has to contact her father again. And when you've been abused by somebody, you don't want them in your life, and she doesn't want him in her life. So she's willing to, you know, elevate her arm and do what she needs to do.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but still have you come back and talk more about what resources available and what legislation has been even proposed to amend this. Our guest is Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter with USA Today Network.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car, he came home, and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at easterseals.com.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter for USA Today Central Wisconsin. And we were talking about her fantastic piece that was published last week, talking about that in Wisconsin, minors need approval for physical and mental care from their adult, their parents. And for a lot of minors, that is detrimental. And there is not a lot of recourse for them to be able to get the care that they need if they are in a situation where their parent is not the parent that many of us have as far as wanting what's best for us. And so as you've been researching this, what was the background? Because we're one of 16 states that this is the how our laws are set up to protect, I imagine, minors. And so what is the argument for this law?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of reasons why, and I can't speak to the other 15 states, but in Wisconsin, there is this law, Defense of Infancy. And Defense of Infancy has really good intentions. You don't want a 15-year-old signing a credit card contract and then suddenly their credit is messed up. And, you know, that's a really great example of why you would want to intervene as a parent. But like any law, there's a lot of hubris in this, because once you prevent a minor from signing a contract, they can't open a bank account, which is really harmful if you are on your own and you don't have anybody. You can't sign medical records, as we were talking about. It's really hard to, you know, get any kind of independent stability if you are unable to sign a contract. I mean, think about all the ways that you sign contracts in a given day, and then realize if you couldn't sign that, you'd be in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the limits if a kid is, or a minor is experienced, or they don't know who their legal guardian is at some point. You know, they've been in the system, they've been thrown around. A lot of kids have been couch surfing for so long because of negligent parents or legal guardians that, you know, when it comes time to get the signature they need, they have no idea who it is they even need to reach out to. So that becomes a really huge problem when you're desperate for care.
And so has there been legislation, or is there anyone in our state legislature who is sponsoring, proposing amendments to this, or where are we as far as, because it sounds like, as far as what I interpreted from your report, the only recourse to this problem is a legal one, is actually changing the laws.
Yeah, that's a way. Yeah, that's I think the biggest thing to get over. This would be a huge hurdle that would no longer be there. You know, in 2019, House of Hope, who we've been talking about, the organization was able to pass Act 22, which allowed 17-year-olds to be admitted to adult homeless shelters. That allows for that specific group to get they can go into a homeless shelter and volunteer to be admitted, and they're given all the treatment of an adult who is experiencing homelessness. But because of the law, they still can't access medical bills medical autonomy in general. So one of the laws that was proposed was a safe harbor law. And this was, you know, and safe harbor means essentially that those who are experiencing sex trafficking, victims of sex trafficking, aren't treated as criminals in the adult or juvenile courts. We know that sex traffickers are, you know, stalking or finding, you know, they're finding young people and they're taking them and they're forcing them to do things against their will. And if law enforcement intervenes, that is when they're treated like adults. It's when they commit a crime. In 2020, the safe harbor law to amend this criminal act died in committee. So this was supposed to take away this discipline or punitive part of what, you know, this victim is experiencing. Without this amendment, a lot of victims of sex trafficking don't come forward because they mm-hmm. don't want to face the legal repercussions. They get trapped in a cycle. And then the other law right now that died in committee, or proposal that died in committee, I should say, would have allowed the window of consent in Wisconsin to reflect the federal window of consent when it comes to getting kids into a homeless shelter. So children and adolescents who are under 17 right now in Wisconsin, if they end up in a homeless shelter and that shelter is licensed to take them, they have to get consent of the parent or legal guardian. And a lot of times it isn't because the parent is neglectful. It's that they're homeless themselves. Mm-hmm. So trying to track down where this parent or legal guardian is can take more than 12 hours. Federal consent windows have this at 72 hours. So, you know, if we can't find, the parent to consent or the legal guardian to consent to a child or adolescent being at a homeless shelter, they essentially get kicked out. So that's another thing that can be done. That bill also, or that proposal also died in committee. So both of those things happened in 2020, which makes sense because, I mean, there was the pandemic and there was a lot going on. But
there wasn't a lot of work that year.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that, you know, people can make, like, be aware of is that if you talk to your representative, you can make sure that these bills are put forth again. But, you know, the other thing that people can do is to say, like, we need to change this defense of infancy law or revise it so that children and adolescents can obtain their own medical rights if they need it, if they have no other choice.
Well, thank you so much for your reporting on this. It's so important, and it seems like you've started a conversation for more people to know about this, talk about this, and actually look for solutions for these minors and having them have more autonomy. So, Natalie Eilbert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Mama, what does the chicken say?
Chicken. Oh, okay.
And a wolf?
Oh, a wolf.
What about the tiny dog? Cat.
Aww.
Owl.
Ooh.
Dolphin? What does the turkey say? Whale.
Yeah, whale sound.
Do the giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Okay. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit NHTSA.gov.
/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway
Traffic Safety Administration. WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio.